Hi, my name is Mark Wilkins, and I'd like to spend a few moments with you before your session to talk a little bit about hypnosis. Perhaps answer some questions you may have on your mind, and this will save us a lot of time when your session actually begins. Now, for you to understand how hypnosis works, it is very important for you to understand how your mind works. You know, we never think about how our mind works. We basically say to ourselves, if we think about it, I think, so I exist, and we let it go at that. But you know, we really have three very separate and distinct minds. They do different things, and they have a hard time interacting and communicating with each other. First, we have the conscious mind. Well, that's where we are right now. And below that level of awareness, we have something called the subconscious mind. And yet, there is a deeper part of us, the unconscious mind. Well, for the reason you are here today, we can eliminate the unconscious mind. Basically, that is the part of us that does two things. First, it controls the strength and weakness of our immune system. And second, it controls the functions, the autonomic body functions, such as our heart beating, our eyes blinking, and things in this order. We don't have to worry about these today, so let's just forget about that part of us for right now. The conscious mind is where we spend most of our time. I want you to understand that it is basically only has four things that it does and no more. The first thing it does, it analyzes. What is that? Well, that is the part of us that looks at problems, analyzes them, figures a way to solve those problems that are bothering us at a particular moment. It is also the part of us that makes hundreds of decisions we have to make to get through the average day. Decisions we think are automatic, but in fact are not. Things like, should I open the door? Should I turn on the water? Should I tie my shoes? Well, I think those are automatic functions, but we must make a decision as to whether or not we want to do these things. Now, the second part of the conscious mind is a part that starts to get us into a little trouble sometimes. We call this part the rational part of our conscious mind. This part of us must give us a reason why we behave in any particular fashion. You see, if we don't have a reason why we do things that we do, we become anxious and nervous and frustrated. And if it goes on long enough, it can lead to serious mental illness. The mental hospitals, for example, are full of people who do things and they don't know why they do them. The only problem with the reason the rational mind may give us on why we behave in any particular fashion is it is never original. For example, a smoker says he smokes because it calms him, makes him feel relaxed, gives him time to pause and gather his thoughts. An overweight person will say, I'm overweight because I eat when I'm bored, I eat when I'm nervous, or I have a glandular problem. The problems with this reasoning is it is never original. Before the smoker developed his habit, he heard other people that smoked say, I smoke because it makes me feel calm and relaxed. Or he heard an overweight person say, I'm just overweight because I eat when I'm nervous. The problem with this is we understand and know the reason why people are smokers and overweight. Generally, smokers start because of their need for security. They want to belong to another gang or group of friends, usually in their younger years, somewhere between 12 and 20. Security is a basic need for all human beings. We generally get all our security we need when we grow up in our family, but usually at the age of 12 or 13, somewhere in that area, our parents don't seem as smart as they used to be. So we shut off our ability to gain security from those individuals, and we want that security by being part of another group. Some of them smoke and some of them don't. If we feel that we don't belong to this particular group because our subconscious mind is a very interesting part of us, it must protect us against danger, and not getting the necessary security we need is a definite danger to us. Frequently, it will say, smokers are accepted and secure. When that happens, the next time someone offers you a cigarette and you take it, and immediately you feel like you are part of this group and your security level goes up. That is why people start smoking. It has nothing to do with being calm or relaxed. So you must understand that the reason the rational mind gives us why we behave in a particular fashion is never original, and it is always incorrect. You don't start smoking because it makes you feel calm. You start smoking because you need security. Now, the next part of the conscious mind is what we call willpower. Now, we are all familiar with willpower. You might say, I'm going to put down this pack of cigarettes and nothing on God's earth will make me start smoking again. Well, we all know how long that lasts. You know, if you go on a diet, how long that lasts. Just until willpower weakens and then the old habits come back again. The last part of the conscious mind is what we call working memory. And that's the memory we need every day. How do I find my way to work? What's my husband or wife's name? What's my children's names? What is my phone number? Things on this order. The memory we need just to get through an average day. Now, this is all that this conscious mind does. It does nothing else. I want you to think of this part of your mind. Well, if you've ever seen that show, for example, on TV called Star Trek, I'm sure you are familiar with the character called Spock. Spock is a very logical and analytical person. So is our conscious mind. If you will, we call our Spock mind. Very logical and very analytical and frequently wrong. Now, where the real you, me, and everyone else lives is in the level below the conscious called the subconscious mind. The subconscious mind is awesomely powerful. It can make you into anything you would like to be. Rich and famous, thin, happy or sad. It is the real us. To understand how the subconscious mind works, you need to understand that it is very much like a computer, and it operates just like a computer operates. You know that if you go out and buy a computer, put it on your desk, and ask it a question, it will not be able to answer you. The reason is, at that point, that computer has no programming in it whatsoever. Now, a computer can only operate based on the programming that is placed in it, and it must operate on that programming. It has no choice. You know that if you change the programming in a computer that you buy at a store, it no longer can operate on the old programming, and it must operate on the new programming information that has been placed into it. Well, this is the way our subconscious mind works. It's like a computer. It functions on the same rules and same regulations as the electronic one does, only it is much more powerful. We program our computer every day of our lives through our life experiences. When we are born, our computers are basically unprogrammed. There is a little bit of programming in it, but not much. Every day we add programming to our internal computer. Now, the primary rule of our computer is this: it must make us into the type of person that it perceives us to be, based on all the programming that has been placed into it, and will continue to be placed into it until we die. For example, if that computer of ours, based on its programming, says we're fat, we're fat. If it says we're thin, or a smoker, a success or a failure, that is what we are. It adds up all the programming and makes a decision about us, about the type of person that we are. This programming has been placed in there from many sources, and it must operate on this programming. What is some of the operational software, if you will, that is in this internal computer? Well, first is all our memory since the day we were born. We think of things that have happened to us in the past as either forgotten or as retained in the form of memory. So what we are doing here is we are talking about the working memory of the conscious mind. The subconscious mind is like a video camera. Everything that has ever happened to you, that you have heard, seen, smelled, or tasted, is locked permanently into the memory banks of your subconscious mind. We never forget anything. If there was a reason to, in hypnosis, we can access that memory bank, and it seems like we can actually travel back in time. For example, in regression hypnosis, we can travel back and relive your first birthday or your birth. Now, this is much more than recall. It is actually like you are there. It is happening all over again. You can see what happened. You can smell. You can taste. You can hear very clearly. We never forget anything. Only at the conscious level. The second programming we have in the inner mind, the subconscious mind, is habits. Now, you have three kinds of habits, and only three. You know you have good habits, and you know you have some bad habits. But really, most of our habits aren't good or bad. Most of our habits really are utilitarian habits. We automatically respond in certain fashion when something else happens. When the phone rings, for example, we don't look at it and wonder what it is. We automatically pick it up, and depending on our mood, we answer it in a certain manner. Now, the next thing in our subconscious mind is emotion. Of course, we wouldn't want to be without our emotion, love and caring and all those good emotions, but sometimes our emotions get us into trouble. The conscious mind cannot deal with emotions in any way. That is not part of its job. And any time we need emotions, our conscious mind parts like the Red Sea, and we deal with this particular situation from our irrational, juvenile-like, but highly intelligent subconscious mind. As I said, sometimes it gets us into trouble. I know that many times in the past, you've dealt with a situation and it didn't have to have a lot of emotion involved with it, just a little bit. Then after the situation was over and that analytical conscious mind took over again, you heard yourself thinking or saying something like this: "Why did I say that? Why did I do that? It was so stupid." And that inner subconscious mind just laughed and said, "Yeah, but it was a lot of fun." This has happened to all of us at some time or another. Now, the next thing in the subconscious mind, and probably the most important part of us, is the protective mind. It must protect us against danger, real or imagined. You see, something imagined by the subconscious mind is just as if it was actually happening. The subconscious mind can't tell the difference, and it must protect us against danger. A quick example: a few months ago, a woman came in to see me, and she was 5'1". She weighed very close to about 300 pounds. She sat in the chair and told me about how she had an eating problem. But years of experience told me she didn't have an eating problem. I knew that an event in her past had caused her subconscious mind to protect her by making her heavy. Briefly, what happened with this particular woman was, she could not recall this with her conscious mind, but when she was a little girl of 6 years old, her stepfather abused her. She told her mother, and her mother didn't believe her. She felt guilty, as if she was doing something wrong, but she didn't get heavy at that point. When she was in high school in the 50s, she felt as if she was a little more promiscuous than she felt good to herself about. She felt the boys in high school were just trying to hurt her. That didn't cause her to become heavy either, But when she was 24 years old, she married her white knight. The man could do no wrong. On their honeymoon, the second day they were married, they were having dinner in the Bahamas, and he decided to cleanse his soul and show her how much he loved her. He told her that when he was just a young guy of 19 years old and in the Air Force, he used to pick up women and just use them and throw them away. Well, you can imagine what the subconscious mind felt about this one man. This woman felt she could trust above every other man in the world who would actually do this to a woman. The subconscious mind went back into its memory banks and into its computer information and said, "The stepfather hurt you very badly. The boys in high school were trying to hurt you very badly. And now this one man you thought you could trust above every other man says he could do this to a woman. Then he certainly has the capability of doing it to you." And instantly, that subconscious mind made this decision. Men hurt women. Therefore, I must protect you against men. Now, the subconscious mind couldn't teach her karate, couldn't buy her a gun, so it protected her in the only way it could. And this woman began gaining weight rapidly. So very soon she became very fat, and certainly men no longer had an interest in her, and she was protected. That is how the subconscious mind protects us, in a way that we would prefer it didn't, but protection is its primary job. The last part of the subconscious mind is a negative part of us. Although the subconscious is so powerful, it is also the laziest part of us. It doesn't like to do the work that is required to accept positive suggestions to give us change in areas where we would like to have change. It likes to keep things the way they are. It takes too much work to make change in a positive way. The positive suggestions are one of the most difficult things to get into your subconscious mind. On the other hand, negative suggestions go into this inner part of us like a hot knife through butter, because it doesn't take any work to accept a negative suggestion. Let me show you how this works. You take a very heavy person and they get out of a shower. They're standing in front of the mirror telling off. What do you think they say to themselves as they are looking in that mirror? "Boy, am I fat." Now that idea or thought or word goes right into the subconscious mind, and the subconscious mind says, "Yes, that matches the programming that I have in here. That matches my perception of you." Therefore, it accepts that suggestion, so the perception of that individual being fat becomes stronger and they become heavier. On the other hand, if you take that same heavy person and stand them in front of the mirror and have them say, "I'm thin, I'm trim, I'm gorgeous, I'm beautiful," that goes towards the subconscious mind, and the subconscious mind says, "No, that doesn't match the programming," and it's not allowed in. So, how do we get suggestions into the inner mind? Now, it is so important for you to understand this. If an idea, if a thought, if a concept is allowed to go into the subconscious mind, it must happen. You are changing programming, and that inner mind must respond to the new programming. But it is not that easy. Let me explain how it works. You make a decision, let's say to stop smoking. You make your mind up at that conscious level that nothing in the world is going to stop you from ending that smoking habit. Now your conscious mind says, "That's wonderful, and I support you 100%. You are going to be healthier. You are not going to get emphysema or heart disease or blood diseases. But to have change effectively happen, you have to get that idea into your computer, into that subconscious mind, in order to change that programming." And so you say, "Fine," and you start to send that idea down to the subconscious mind. But here is the problem. There is one more part of the conscious mind that I haven't told you about yet. I want you to think of this part of the conscious mind as kind of an employee, if you will, of the subconscious mind. And every Friday night, the subconscious mind gives it its pay for the week, and it does exactly what it's told, and it only has one job. And that job is to stop, to put on hold, like a red traffic light, any suggestion of positive change that we give ourselves or receive from the outside world, and it stops it. And then, in a way we don't understand, but we do know it happens, there is a communication between this part of us called the critical factor of the conscious mind and the subconscious mind. The critical factor says, well, this person wants to stop smoking. Can I let this suggestion in? Now remember, if that suggestion goes into the inner mind, it must happen. But the subconscious mind says, wait a minute. He's been smoking for 20 years. He needs cigarettes for security. Besides, you realize I have to do so many years of reprogramming and I don't feel up to it. I don't want to do it. Reject the suggestion. Well, that's the critical factor's boss. So the critical factor of the conscious mind kind of turns into a mirror and rejects that suggestion, and it can't go into the inner subconscious mind. And no change occurs. Now, we only have one other place to take that idea, and that is to willpower. That is to the conscious mind. And we all know how long willpower lasts. As I said, many times diets have been tried, and how many times have we tried to stop smoking? Well, how do we get that suggestion into that subconscious mind? We use something called hypnosis. Now, what hypnosis does is this. It bypasses the critical factor, that blocking part of our conscious mind. It's like giving a couple of dollars and sending it to Wendy's for a late night dinner. And we'll tell you when to come back. Now, this is what most people who are ignorant of hypnosis think hypnosis really is. If this was all hypnosis was, then some of the stories you may have heard about hypnosis might be true. Things like, I can control you, or I can make you do anything I want you to do, and you'd have to do it. Well, if this was all it was, that would be true. But God did not leave us that vulnerable. Yet, this is true up to this point. But the instant this factor of our conscious mind is bypassed, what happens is this. We go into a very deep state of hypnosis. Now, when we are in a state of hypnosis, it is not what you expect it to be. Our bodies are very relaxed. But the more we go into hypnosis, the more our conscious mind becomes alert. In the deeper levels of hypnosis, your conscious mind is 200 or 300% more alert than you are at this very moment. All of your five senses, including hearing, smelling, and tasting, and seeing, are hundreds of times better than they are right now. So when you are in hypnosis, you are not asleep. You are extremely alert, probably more alert and clear-minded than you have ever been before. Now, the important thing to understand about this is that the conscious mind takes on a different role when you are in hypnosis. I want you to think of it as playing the role of the guardian of the gates, protecting you. When you receive a suggestion in hypnosis, you hear it loud and clear. Now, when you hear that suggestion, and these are the tools for success or failure in hypnosis. When you hear that suggestion with your conscious mind, you must, and you really do have no choice, make four decisions about that suggestion. Which decision you make determines whether that suggestion is allowed to enter your subconscious mind, or whether it is rejected. If it is allowed to enter, you will have the change that you are looking here to achieve. If it is rejected, again, there will be no change. Now, what are those four decisions or choices? Well, the first one could be when you hear that suggestion, you think or say to yourself something like this. I like that suggestion. Boy, I know that one is going to work for me. Now, that mental attitude at the conscious level allows that suggestion to go into your computer, the subconscious mind, and the change begins. Unfortunately, you have three other choices. The next choice could be, well, forget actually hating the suggestion or feeling it as something against your morals or beliefs, but perhaps that suggestion is a tiny little bit uncomfortable to you. Well, if that suggestion sounds just the tiniest bit uncomfortable to you for any reason, it is automatically blocked with the conscious mind and it is not allowed to enter the computer, and therefore no change occurs. The next choice could be that you are neutral about that suggestion. You don't care if you get it or you don't care if you don't get it. It is kind of meaningless suggestion to you. The conscious mind automatically blocks that suggestion and it can't get through to the computer. The last choice you have is probably the choice which causes more people to fail using hypnosis. It goes something like this. When you hear the suggestion, you say to yourself, "Oh, I like that suggestion. Boy, I hope it works." The word hope is the twin sister to the word try, and try means automatic failure. If you look back on your life being honest with yourself, anytime you tried to do something, you failed. Think about it. Anytime you use the word try or you tried something, you tried to make something work, usually ended in failure. If you look back at your life, anytime you have said to yourself, "I'm going to do it," there was no question about it. You did it, and you probably did it very well. Hope is the twin sister of try. You could hope for the cows to come home. That doesn't mean they are going to come home. You can hope to win that lotto, but you never do, do you? So, if you say hope or try, that suggestion is blocked by the conscious mind, and it is not allowed to enter the subconscious mind. And again, there is no change. Now here's something to think about. If you eliminate the words hope and try from your personal and professional vocabulary from this moment on, within a week, you are going to feel better than you have ever felt in a long time. The only time a suggestion is allowed to go into your computer, into your subconscious mind, is if you take that mental attitude when you hear that suggestion and say, "I like that suggestion. I know it's going to work for me." And that is how easy it is. Now, let me give you some real truths. I have been in the field for many, many years, and I have never hypnotized a single person, and I doubt that I ever will. There is only one form of hypnosis. There always has been, and there always will be. All hypnosis is self-hypnosis. And you don't need me to go into a deep, beautiful state of hypnosis by yourself. And you certainly don't need me to give you suggestions of positive change in any area of your life. You can do that all by yourself. The reason you are here today is only because you do not know how to do it. But we teach people how to do that all the time. It's the easiest thing in the world. The reality and the truth is, all I can ever be is a guide for you and nothing more. If you allow me to be your guide, I'll show you how to place yourself into a beautiful state of hypnosis, feeling the physical relaxation and mental alertness. If you allow me to be your guide, I'll show you how to stay there until we are finished. If you don't want to be in this beautiful relaxed state, the slightest thought by you and it is over, and you are back in your normal state of awareness. But if you follow my guidance, I'll show you how to stay there. Now, I want you to follow my directions, and I won't ask you to do anything immoral, illegal, or fattening. And then the most important thing of all is, if you accept the suggestions given to you with the correct mental attitude, "I like it, I know it's going to work," you'll have change in the way you want it. If you take one of the other choices, you'll fail. I can't force a suggestion into your mind. Only you can allow it to happen. Hypnosis is a 100% consent state by you. You must allow things to happen. You can stop them from happening with the slightest thought if you don't want it to happen. Now, I want you to understand that anyone, as long as their IQ is above 70 and they want hypnosis, can go into a very deep level of hypnosis. How fast? Just like that. The only thing that keeps a person from going into that beautiful state of physical relaxation and mental alertness is if they have a fear or misconception about hypnosis. And I'd like to talk to you briefly about some of the more common fears and misconceptions of hypnosis. Some people feel that when you are in hypnosis, that you are asleep. Well, I want you to know that when your mind is 300 or 400% more alert than you are this very moment, that is about as far from sleep that you are ever going to get in this particular lifetime anyway. Hypnosis has nothing to do with sleep. Some people are afraid they won't wake up from hypnosis, and that is true. I agree with that. I have never known anyone to wake up from hypnosis. You see, there is only one thing you can wake up from, and that's sleep. If you are not asleep, you can't wake up. Semantics, well, yes, but we use words in our profession. They are our only tools. The term is emerge from hypnosis. Anytime you want to emerge from hypnosis, all you have to do is have the slightest thought that you don't want to be in this relaxed state anymore, and instantly it's over and you are back to your normal awareness. Then there is that powerful misconception that some people have that says, I can control you and make you do anything I want you to do. I have to be honest with you. I wish that was true. I wish that I was able to control you, because that would make my job very successful. Remember, you have those four choices when you hear a suggestion, and that the only way that a suggestion will be allowed to enter your subconscious mind is if you say, I like it. I know it's going to work, and I can't force that in. I can't control you. I want you to know that you and you alone are responsible for your success. You and you alone are responsible for your failure. What mental attitude you take when you hear a suggestion determines success or failure. Some people have the misconception that they will tell me their deep, dark secrets when they are in hypnosis. For the same reasons of mental alertness, you are more in control of anything you choose to do or say while you're in hypnosis than you are right now. If you don't want to tell me something, then you won't. If I ask you for information that was none of my business, you would simply tell me that it's none of my business. No one can make you divulge information that is proprietary. As a matter of fact, if I wanted that kind of information from you, I would stand a much better chance of obtaining it now in your normal conscious awareness, because right now you are mentally dull compared to your mental capabilities when you are in hypnosis. Some people say, wait a minute, I hear what you're saying, but I've seen stage hypnotists work, and I know those people control those folks. I've seen them bark like dogs and think they have body odor or something on this odor. Let me tell you how that works. When a stage hypnotist comes to town, there are advertisements, and a lot of people are interested, so they show up. They want to see the show, and a lot of them would like to be volunteers as subjects for the stage hypnotist. Now, when that stage hypnotist comes out and gives you a little bit of a short lecture on hypnosis, saying he is showing the entertainment side of hypnosis, you know this whole show depends on you, the audience. You're the people that he needs for the show. And he asks the people, is there anybody who is willing to volunteer to come up on stage? Well, you'd be amazed how many hands go up. But that stage hypnotist does not necessarily take those people at all. He tells those people, you know, he says, really good subjects are those individuals who have the best abilities to imagine, a wonderful imagination, and the ability to concentrate. And he says he will give the whole audience a test for imagination and concentration. He's kind of telling a little fib, for he is testing the audience to find out two very important things. First, who goes into hypnosis like that? And more importantly, he is testing those people to find out who wants to have fun and who is uninhibited in public. These are the people he invites up on stage. They usually enter hypnosis very rapidly and very easily. And those people, when they hear the suggestion because they want to have fun, take the mental attitude, I like it, I want it to work, and it does. Many times on stage, a person thinks they want to do these things, but when it comes time to actually have it happen, they don't have the correct mental attitude and the suggestion is ineffective. These people, the stage hypnotist sends back to their seats. Or if it's long enough into the show, he will sit them on the stage chair and ignore them for the rest of the show. Stage hypnosis operates by the same rules as clinical hypnosis. You always have the choice as to whether or not you want that suggestion. If you don't want it, it will be rejected and there will be no change. So you see, hypnosis is up to you. People ask me what my success rate is with smoking and weight control. And I have to be honest with those people. My success rate is 100%. I've had an awful lot of training in hypnosis. I know exactly what to say to my clients. And if they accept those suggestions, they'll have a wonderful change. And if they reject them, they will have no change. So my success rate is always perfect. Will yours be perfect? If you accept the suggestions with the correct mental attitude, I like it. I know it's going to work. Yes, you'll have 100% success rate also. If you accept with any other ideas, you will fail. It is up to you. I know you are going to enjoy our sessions together, and remember, hypnosis is a wonderful, wonderful way to change our lives, and it is available to you now. Are you ready to begin?